Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening and welcome to A Man's Voice. And we want to thank all of you that have joined, who enjoyed the Thanksgiving, the Easter Sunday that we had last week, and behind, and the show that we played for one of the previous shows, but there were some people listening, and we hope you enjoy that. We had some kind of technical issues, and we apologize for that, but our goal is to make sure we don't have any more of that as we move along. I want to welcome the panel. Hope you guys enjoyed Easter. Did you guys enjoy? Anybody do anything special? I guess they didn't. Wow. We got a very talkative panel today.
What Easter egg hunting, David?
Wow. Is there money in the eggs? But you did it for your grandkids, right?
I did. Okay. Pamela and I did, yes. Yeah, we did it for grandchildren, and that was one of the nice things we did. And we went to church Easter evening, so that was pretty big. And had a dinner. Wife had a dinner.
You know, it's been a while since we've all talked, and a lot of things have happened that we wanted to talk about. One of them, of course, was the American Airlines piece, but dragging the doctor off. And of course, American Airlines has done a lot of apologies and turnarounds, but just recently, in the last couple of days, now Delta is in trouble for one of their attendants taking a cart, a baby stroller, and grabbing it from the woman, hitting her with it, and throwing it down the aisle. And one of the passengers jumped up to try to get into an argument with the employee from American Airlines. So these airlines, you know, I think when we allowed the airlines to start putting people off, they got the big head, and now they don't know how to turn it around. What do you think, Ron? What happened with the Americans? Because they remember airlines used to be everybody dressed up. It was nice. You got drinks and everything. Now it's turned into a fiasco to even ride the airlines anymore.
I think the airlines have become bullies, and I think, in my opinion, they got away with murder. They got away, you know, with overbooking, and they just there's no customer service. It's not flying the friendly skies like it once was, you know, the glamorous, like you said, you know, getting your meals, and everybody was friendly, and it's, you just pack them in, you know, you get as many people as you can. They're rude. They're not, you know, I haven't had a pleasant flight experience in I don't know how many years, and I'm not talking about just domestic. I'm talking about international too. And I don't know. I mean, it's all about money, I think, and they're just concerned in cutting costs and charging more for tickets. So, you know, we're paying more and we're getting less and we're getting treated like crap. And, you know, I'm glad that these videos have come out in the, you know, so that everybody can see what's going on, and I'm glad that the airlines are now in the spotlight, and you know, maybe they'll clean their act a little bit. But you know, it's very frustrating to fly.
Well, you know, to me, it happened. It started when we allowed the airlines to start putting people off and gave them authority. We gave them authority to be police officers for their passengers, and something just kind of went whack from there. And, you know, it kind of goes back to our police officers have that same authority, and they're kind of, you know, have been in trouble for being rude and those kinds of things. So I think we have to reassess how we do that. What do you think, Bruce?
Well, I think what Ron said is true. It seems to be that with more and more tension, there's less and less patience and less politeness. So that I found whenever I travel, what I try to do, assuming that they're going to look at all of us as adversarial nowadays, unfortunately, I try to set a tone with a flight attendant or anybody that I can make eye contact with that's part of the service of the flight, to let them know I'm a friendly guy. So you don't have to be surly or think I'm going to do something wrong. And that seems to work wonders because they get barraged by a lot of people. And I'm not defending rude behavior. They have no right to do what some of those things were done at all. But I also think that the airlines, with the crush of get it done, get it over with, get them in, get them out, we don't have any time for being polite anymore, that they're not training their people in a lot of ways that they should be training them in.
Right. But I think they've always had the stress of getting people on the airlines, on the flights and out, right? I mean, this is not a new thing for
True.
Them. It should have been something that they practiced.
But they used to get, you know, there's turnover in flight attendants too. You don't have age-long flight attendants anymore. Career flight attendants are becoming less and less. And who's to say the new ones are getting the kind of training in all sorts of ways, like patience and smile even if it's hard to do so, and turn the other cheek even if you feel you don't want to. I'm not so sure they're getting that kind of training anymore.
Okay. Yes.
Part of my job when I worked in New York was I worked with the airlines as well as shipping companies. And, you know, the airlines are not money makers as far as making corporate profits. That's why a lot of them merged and went out of business. So, that's probably the story about all public transportation. They're not high money earners. And I don't think the airlines are subsidized except for their, you know, where they can have their individual flight takeoffs and landings and everything. So, and I agree that the stewardess and stewards that are on the aircraft are quite different from the ones that used to be on in the old days when Pan Am existed. I think they're rude, and I think they're symbolic. The police action is symbolic of the same problem that Afro-Americans experience with police officers being rude and being physical, instead of being polite first and trying to use other tactics that are not barbaric. But, yeah, they have a money problem, and that's the issue with airlines. No matter how much we're paying them, the fuel costs, the landing rights at the airport, and the configuration of the – because they have to fly flights. You know, it used to be that you have to carry the mail to get the preferred flight times and flight schedules. And you have to fly at these frequencies even though there's nobody to fly. So that's one of – yeah, that's what they have to put up with.
All right. Well, I hope they – because it used to be pleasant to ride. I mean – they took away drinking and all that kind of thing, so we'll move on. But, one of the things we ended with last time that I know several people wanted to get back into the conversation. I've had lots of comments through email and asking me about the gun issue, about kids with guns, buying toy guns. We kind of ended with that the last time we were on the air, but we didn't really finish it. And there seems to be very strong opinions on both sides. And I know we wanted to bring it back up. I know Bruce wanted to say something. Bruce, we talked since we were on air last time about your thinking on this. What were you thinking?
Well, it's been a while, but I think kind of rolling back in my mind, people every bit have a right to keep their kids, their family, and everybody away from weapons if they choose. That's a God-given right as far as I'm concerned. But the people that decide to have weaponry of some sort in their lives need to also take on the responsibility and make sure that is done properly, trained properly, things are taken care of properly, and handled in a way that can be as safe as possible. Because, you know, weapons, guns, other kinds of weapons are not going to disappear off the face of the earth. They've been here since the beginning of time in one form or another. So I look at it as a standpoint is if you want that kind of exposure in your life and in your family, then you have to make sure that you show people how to respectfully handle and use said equipment.
So you're saying that you think it's okay for kids to have toy guns?
Well, the way things are nowadays, I don't see it as not a big deal like I used to. It is a big deal now, so I would tend to lean a little bit more towards, boy, if they're fine without toy guns in their life, that's fine. Don't introduce them. But if, say, you have a family that, and I don't happen to be one, but say you have a friend of mine, their family have been around guns all their lives, and their kids have toy guns, it still comes back to, if you're going to introduce that to your kids at whatever age that is, and we could debate all day long about what age that should be, they have to show how to, as best as possible, how to respectfully handle, use, and operate that equipment. Just like driving a car, that can be a weapon as well. And if you don't, if our, in one form or another, our children coming up are not properly trained how to drive, that can be a pretty deadly weapon as well.
Let me be blunt. Your grandson, how old is your grandson?
Alex?
Yeah.
8 and a half.
Okay, so does he have toy guns?
No.
So
my son and my sister-in-law do not want them to play with toy guns. And
okay.
I respect that.
Okay. What are your thoughts, Don? I know that you have grandchildren also. Do you think they should have toy guns?
No, I don't allow them to play with guns as well. I think guns need to be a situation where a person must be educated to the purpose of a gun. And I don't think we have done a great job of educating people of its purpose. I think the purpose of a gun is to shoot and kill, and that's my personal opinion. To answer your question, no, I don't think that my grandchildren or my children need to be around guns.
So if they go to spend the night at somebody's house and they're all playing cops and robbers with guns, what do you do?
Well, they would know my feelings on it, and they would probably keep it away from me. I probably won't even know about it.
Frank, I know
David,
you also have friends.
David, can I interject something?
Sure.
Just yesterday, I was over at my granddaughter's birthday party, and her grandparents on the other side, he's a big gun advocate, big gun lover, or has been around guns all his life, whatever you want to tag that. And he was showing me a variety of guns on his phone that he just purchased. And while we're at her party, he pulls out a concealed weapon. The breech was open and all that. And then he shows me the clip, and I'm going, oh, my gosh, I'll use that word, my daughter-in-law is going to kill him. She didn't say a word. I found that whole incident rather interesting and uncomfortable for even me, because I didn't think that was a right time to have something like that. Even though it was a sidebar discussion with me, he just pulled this out, and I'm going, holy moly. So I just wanted to share that with the public.
He pulled it out at a children's party?
Yeah.
Did anyone reprimand him for it?
He didn't aim it at anybody. He pulled it out of his concealed weapon holster, showed it to me. The clip was open, showed me the clip to show me what kind of bullets are in it. And I know what I would have said if it was in my house, but I maybe right or wrong, you guys may disagree. I didn't think it was my place to say anything, but other than I said, what are you doing with this here? And that's all I said. I said, that's, you know, like, this is wrong. It's a wrong
Bruce.
Wrong time.
Hey, David, that's Bruce. What I'm saying. What is the purpose of the gun? What was his purpose, Bruce?
Well, his purpose was with his, I guess, his love of gun. I don't know him that well, but his purpose with his love of guns or whatever, he kind of saw it as, ooh, I'm proud of this. I want to show this to you. And I'm going, whoa, wait a minute. So that, in a short venue, I'd say that was his purpose at that moment.
But his purpose for the gun, he had concealed, so he just carries it wherever he goes?
Yeah, evidently, or he did yesterday.
And this is your grandson's other grandfather?
Yes, granddaughter's other grandfather, yep.
So don't you think that he is going to introduce your grandson to guns?
Well, if it hasn't been done already. But what was so ironic about it and so controversial for just me thinking in my head was I know how strong my sister and my daughter-in-law is about guns. And she didn't say a word, not a word. And she was right there.
Well, and my whole thing is Toys R Us has tons of aisles of gondolas of guns. So it must be a popular toy these days. All of the
always
games,
have.
Now, a lot of the games,
been.
Well, true, but now it's a different time.
Yeah.
And most of the games that our kids are looking at and most of our junior high and up kids are seeing is guns. There's a lot of that going on. Frank, I know you have grandkids and you kind of said something about this last time, but I know that you said that you would not, you don't want your kids to be around guns, but when you see the stores and things like that, how do you, if one of your grandsons came to you and asked you for a gun, what would you tell them about it?
Well, let me tell you, I mistakenly the other day, Easter, in their gift baskets were the bubble gum, what I would call a bubble gun, something that makes these bubbles. And I called it a gun, and my three-year-old corrected me and said it's a shooter. Okay? And,
wow.
All right? Real, you know, I old school, I said gun. He said it's a shooter, and he told me that more than once. And I said, you know, I'm going to change my language because guns are inappropriate. It's, you know, some of the people have been complaining about politically correct language. Well, the politically correct language is not saying guns, because the minute you say guns in our country, you stand to have a big problem, even though it might be legal in the state you are to carry. So I want to tell you now, I'm very much against guns overall. I'm a military person. I've shot in the military, and I shoot very well. I've lived in Alaska where, as a sixth grader, I had a weapon on a regular daily basis anytime I left the property, particularly to go to the post office, which is 6 miles away. All right, it was for my safety, personal safety, animals. And I inadvertently one day discharged the weapon right between my grandmother's legs in a small confined space,
wow,
sitting across from her, all right? So that there led to my change in what I think about guns, all right? Didn't kill her, but I shot right between her legs. Now, let me just be serious with you. There are not many people you're going to meet in this world or in this country or in the police force or in the armed forces that aren't idiots in regard to handling a weapon. All right? Now, that's the armed forces. That's the police. That's Frank McKinney. And the reason, and what we do is in the military, we don't even give the keys or the possession of the ammunition and the gun to an individual unless the defense condition has risen to a significant level. So on a normal watch standing basis, in normal peacetime, there is the gun and the ammunition, but not the cartridges inserted into the 45 or whatever they're using. All right. And the reason for that is because we know that people will play howdy doody. They will twirl the gun and discharge it. And this includes commanding officers of ships. We've had commanding officers recently in the recent years that have not been politically correct and who have been relieved from their command because once they get a gun in their hand, for whatever reason, they like to point it at people when it's loaded. They like to twirl it. And I've seen officers go into banks and discharge the weapon, you know, while they're waiting for money to be counted in Bank of America. I've seen the whole gamut, similar to what I did as a sixth grader. So when you take out a gun, like it was said by what it is, the purpose of that weapon is to kill someone or to seriously injure them. And in my opinion, you should, unless you're out there hunting, okay, you should not engage the ammunition in that weapon unless you have a definite point of using it.
I agree with you. I know when I was training, when I was a police officer, and this was in Los Angeles, the rule was you don't pull your gun unless the only time you pull your gun is if you're planning to fire or discharge it. You don't pull it for fun. So I know that that was training, but I see police officers now waving guns all over the place, and I'm always concerned about what kind of training, how the training went. Because the rule used to be you don't pull your gun unless if you're just for fun. You must be planning to use it.
Yeah, that's exactly the way I was trained also, is when you pull it, it's for use.
Right.
So, but no, I would not want to teach my grandchildren anything about weaponry unless we're in a hunting situation and that's something they want to do. And then that would be lock and key thereafter we left that hunting situation, okay? Because I don't think that the purpose of guns are to walk the streets with in America on your waist. In our state of Virginia, we have people who walk and who have their baby in the stroller and a pair of shorts on and have a 38 or a Magnum strapped to their side.
Wow. All right. As we were talking about this, that I think Harvard came out to say, and this is for kids again, for all of us that are fathers watching our kids, they're now saying that technology, the new technology, is causing our kids to be fat, dumb, and mean. And before there was technology, kids were nicer, kids were thinner, kids were smarter. But now with technology, kids don't have to know numbers. They don't have to, they just do what they want to do when they're playing with the games. Do you believe that, Ron?
Well, it's funny you say that because I was actually going to make the comment, but I never got around to it, that I think with guns, with toy guns, I think there used to be an innocence, at least when I was a kid, to playing with toy guns and, you know, cowboys and Indians and whatever situation you have, but there was an innocence to it. And I think what's happened is, movies and the Hollywood industry and video games, they've desensitized, I think, all of us, basically, to where we, you know, see shootings and killings all the time, and each time it gets more and more, you know, grotesque and gruesome. Like right now I'm sitting here watching the news, and I just saw five women shot, one dead in Golden Glades. And, you know, I look at that, and it doesn't even faze me at all. And, you know, it's a sad statement to make, but I think, you know, we're so accustomed to it. I think it's not the actual toy guns itself. I mean, because like I said, when I was a kid, there was an innocence to playing with toy guns, but we didn't have the movies and the violence that you have on TV and the video game. So I think Harvard is right on when they say that. And you know, it makes, I think the younger you are, you know, the less you can rationalize between right and wrong. And so, you know, yeah, I guess maybe it does make you dumber and just, you know, reactionary to being, you know, violent against other people.
Okay.
I would add to that, Ron.
You have really become a babysitter for a lot of people. You get your kids, the kids in cars and everything with technology. You want to say something, Bruce?
Yeah, I would add to what Ron, I would agree with what Ron said and then add to it. It's not just about, and I think he alluded to that, desensitizing us to weaponry. It's all sorts of things. We don't do eye-to-eye contact. We don't talk to each other. We don't touch each other because we might do it in a wrong way. And we're becoming sterile in the way we behave to each other. And when that sets in a big way, there's no value to life. There's no value to relationships. There's no value to human contact. All
that's
that
exactly
stuff starts
it.
To disappearing.
No,
yep,
one of the things
exactly
I was
it.
Noticing the other day, and it dawned on me that young men and women don't dance together anymore. Actually, they dance with each other. When we were kids, that was a no-no. But when they had to put rulers between us to make sure we had so many inches. But men, boys and girls don't dance together anymore. I mean, you know, it's really strange that they don't communicate by talking now.
Nope.
You know, they,
they're physically, David, physically uncomfortable talking to each other eyeball to eyeball in many cases. And that's very sad.
That's true. Okay, but let's get back on to things that are, and we missed a couple of things. And one of them was the bombing. Hold on, one second. Oh, excuse me. You know, when we haven't talked in a few weeks, and of course, our president is, you know, throwing bombs around to try to, in my opinion, divert attention from, you know, things, the Russian piece. So, you know, he bombed, and then now every day there has been bombers, Russian bombers over Alaska. What's going on? What do you think, Don? Where are we, you know, what's going on? North Korea is just recently said they were going to sink one of our boats. Are we getting ready for war?
David, you hit it right on the head. I think we are preparing, and we are preparing ourselves for war. I really do. I think that any time we get to this level where we can't communicate, and this, I don't want to call him a name, but I think you all can put a name on him, in North Korea, he's irrational. He's hard to deal with. They don't know how to deal with him. But he holds weaponry in his hand that can take out the key city in South Korea in which we have an alliance and a commitment to. Now, he's going to start a war. And I think that we need to prepare ourselves because I never felt as uneasy as I feel right now. And I remember the Cuban crisis in Cuba. I remember when we had to come to the brink of war in the 60s. And I think I got that same feeling now. If you can remember last week or week before last, everybody thought we were on our way. It's going to happen again unless we open up some type of dialogue. And it's just terrible. I mean, I don't like what's happening, David. I just don't like what's happening.
You know, in those other conflicts that you mentioned, we had a leader who thought about going to the table. How do we solve this without tossing bombs around. I think it's quite the opposite right now. What do you think, Bruce?
Yeah.
No, I disagree.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't necessarily agree with President Trump's way of doing things, but I don't think he's trying to shut down all dialogue. I think in some ways we've got more dialogue now that could mean something than we've had in a long time. I also agree with Don that in order to make that worth something and work, they have to, our leaders, whether you like them or not, they're our leaders, have to figure out a way to do that, have to sit down or find a way to open up dialogue. And if they really say they're for trying to keep the peace or keep the lid on the boiling pot, then they'll figure out a way to do that. So I'm still, I too am very worried about just what's going to happen. But right now we're not really participants, meaning you and I, we're observers to our supposedly our leaders and our governments figuring out a way to hopefully talk this down off the ledge. And I'm nervous as well, but I don't think they're purposely trying to say I'm not going to talk in the H with you. I think that in itself is discussion. It isn't necessarily good discussion, but it's pounding each other's chest and seeing who's going to blink first. That's not good discussion, but it's also not throwing bombs at each other yet either.
Well,
this is Frank. I'd like to contribute a little bit to this. The North Koreans were massively bombed during the Korean War. I've read where it might have been more bombs dropped on North Korea than there were during the entire World War II. So they don't have a manufactured hatred of the United States. They have a real hatred of the United States predicated on that war. And they have a willingness to undergo a lot of hardships like the North Vietnamese did. So I do not believe it's the problem of Kim Jong in North Korea. I believe the problem is the United States of America, okay? And it has to do with the first issue, which we like weapons, we like guns, we have a defense industry. We have an armed forces that's 100 times bigger than, you know, the other free world, the entire free world. And we somehow mathematically believe we have to have a larger armed forces and a larger capability. And we have a country that cannot on a daily basis fire a rocket or a missile without having a high incidence of failure of that missile and that weapon system. Yet we are trying to tell them that they can't have a nuclear weapon, that they need to disarm. And that's a sovereign country. Just like you couldn't tell the United States that, you couldn't tell Russia that. But somehow we have the friggin' audacity to think that we can tell another country what to do in regard to the weapons. And we're not going to win a war with them. We haven't won a war since Korea. Okay, so we are spending lives, getting people chopped up, getting people killed as a result of our mental attitude of wanting to fight. All right, the people that are fighting are not the elite. None of Trump's children are going to serve in the armed forces. It's only the lower working class and some of the working class that are going to serve in this armed forces. And now we have a missile defense system in South Korea. Okay, we have a demilitarized zone, and that zone is there because we didn't win the Korean War, and even though we bombed the hell out of them.
All right. Jeremiah, are you
a warmongering people.
Okay. Wow. Bruce, what do you got to say to that? Bruce.
What?
Comments from that? David?
David?
Yes, I hear you.
Are you asking me something?
Yes, I was saying comments on what Frank just said.
I respectfully disagree with a lot of what he said. I don't think America is a war-hungry nation. I think most of us in this country don't want anything to do with war. I for one, sure don't, and I don't think Frank does either. But that doesn't mean that our leaders are reflecting the true attitude of the majority of people. But I'm hoping, and praying with that young one, probably wishing, hoping as well, without even knowing it, that our leaders find a way to keep this thing from getting out of hand, and we have to. We have to work with the people that we have in office, whether we like them or not, whether we agree with them or not. And I just don't see the people of the United States being ones that want to go to war. I've never been in one, but I've been awfully close to one. I lost a lot of friends in the war, so I have, unfortunately, somewhat of a scary taste of what it's all about, but I can't imagine what it would be to be in the middle of one.
What about you there, Ron? Ron? You still there?
Hey, David, while you're waiting for Ron, let me tell you about this Russian bear thing you're talking about flying in Alaska. You know, I told you I lived there.
Right.
And, you know, about every 90 miles in Alaska, when I lived there, there is a defense station, a booth, sort of like a large phone booth or a garage size, a single garage, and it's civil defense. So the alarm goes out through the whole state as soon as the military picks up an intrusion in or close proximity to U.S. airspace, which, you know, Russia and Alaska, there's just a few miles separating those places. So we would always catch that thing, and the Army would go on militarization. They would take over my grandmother's farm and station troops and tents and artillery and stuff like that. So these planes that are being flown by Russians are significantly old planes, equivalent to our B-52s. The people that are going up and intercepting these things are flying F-16s and the latest U.S. technology up in the air. So it's really not a serious threat to us if you're in the military, all right? Their planes are intercepted well in advance, but the Russians are, you know, basically trying to communicate with us. But their equipment they're using is old, and there's nothing significant to bomb in Alaska anyway, in my opinion. So you would have to intercept those aircraft before you got to Seattle or something like that. So I'm telling, I respect all of you guys that are on the show, but I really think you need to get on your knees and think about this in a religious context, because we're a country that purports on one hand to be a Christian country, yet on the other hand, we have a gun. So we have a Bible in one hand and a gun in the other hand, and this seems to me to be our modus operandi. Now, I would gladly serve in the armed forces again, and I don't have any problem, but I believe in my judicious use of Frank McKinney, not just, excuse the expression, some butt person who has no empathy for me and doesn't understand what warfare really is, employing me in some of this stuff that you guys are talking about today, the problem with North Korea, the problem with China. You know, we had a problem with China, the problem we have with Mexico, the problem we have with Iran. Okay, the problem we have with the Iraqis, the problem we have with these terrorists, okay, we have right now so many, the wall in Mexico that we want to build. All right, you guys have got to be living on BS to believe that we are not a country that goes out and wants to fight a war. Our technology, our equipment, and everything else is set up to do that. No other country in the world has 12 aircraft carriers. So why do we have 12 times more than anybody else? Because we like to fight, okay? And we want to fight on multiple globes. We're building an armed forces. We maintain the armed forces to carry on two wars simultaneously. not one war, but at least two wars simultaneously. And that's why our bridges are falling down. And that's why our infrastructure in our inner cities are falling down, because we spent all our – that's why we got kids that are dying in our cities, because we spent all our money on weaponry.
Hey, Frank.
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can
hear you loud and clear.
Okay, okay. Sorry, I had to step out for a second. But, you know, I have to say, Frank, that I think you've struck a chord with me. I mean, as much as I hate to admit we're a war-hungry country, I mean, I've heard this before, and I think I actually believe that we are. And not only that, but I think we're bullies. And especially with certain presidents, you know, have been more bullies than others. And I'm not going to mention names, but everybody knows who I'm talking about. And I mean, I don't know if you guys have heard this, but at least in the Hispanic countries, we're referred to as the Yankee imperialists, you know. So we're taught here, you know, when we grow up that we're number one in everything, that we're the best, that we're noble, that we're good people. But, you know, it's like you said, you know, we have the Bible in one hand and guns and slayings in the other hand. So, you know, I think we need to do some deep soul searching. And, you know, I think you're onto something when you say that we just want to create wars. And, you know, we're not taking care of the needs that we have here if we're going to keep spending more and more and more on the military when there's really no need to.
Yeah, I agree with you. We just put $100 million in the air to send to an air base where we alerted the Russians that we're going to send the weaponry there. And the Russians, of course, alerted the people they're working with. And so, but yet we sent these missiles out. That's money down the drain. All right. And we could have done that process a different way and less expensively.
You know, one of the things that I noticed is that seems to be the way that we use to stimulate the economy in the United States is to cause a war to happen. Whenever a war happens, the economy is stimulated, lives are lost, and we seem to be happy. Frank, I wholeheartedly agree with you. We have become the big bullies. How can you tell a country not to practice or defend themselves when we have the most powerful weaponry in the world, and then we act with such arrogance? Now, what I'm saying to you is I know that exists, but the thing is we've got a person in North Korea that doesn't think like Donald Trump. So he's going to give him the opportunity to utilize just what we need. We need to stimulate the economy.
Well, I think the guys in North Korea have a reason, a bona fide reason to be hostile towards us. Okay? So, I mean, we need to look at the history of that. But besides that, we need to understand they're a sovereign nation. And how can you expect us to tell a sovereign nation what to do? All right? We can't tell our own people what to do and get away with
it
very well.
We've done a lot of talking about this, and I think it's something we should bring up again later, but we've been weeks before we've been on the air, and there's a lot more I want to go to the next piece, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but I just want to ask people to feel how they feel. Because right now, we're at the 25th year of the Rodney King riots in Los Angeles, and I want to ask a question. Do you think the United States has any way, do you think they learned anything and we are better, we're the same, or we're worse than we were 25 years ago in race relationships? What do you think, Don?
I think that the race relationships have not gotten better. We have not been able to communicate with each other and with social media, and as Bruce said before, we don't know how to communicate with each other. We don't feel, we don't touch, we don't sympathize anymore. Everybody's on their own island, and I think it's gotten worse since Rodney King. And with the examples on social media now, it's even getting worse when you can have a guy do something really crazy off the wall and it's shown on social media. It just really amplifies the situation. I think the situation has gotten worse, David.
What about you, Jeremiah? I know that you were probably just a baby 25 years ago, but what do you think? Do you think over time race relations have improved, stayed the same, or got worse?
I would say based on the last 10 to 15, can't say 20, but over the last 10 to 15 years, I don't think things have gotten better. There is some withdrawal when it comes to minorities in the United States. For example, a lot of the backlash that we got for having a, black president, Barack Obama. Different things that has happened over the years shows me that we're still behind as where we should be. I think that we could do a better job with this, and it's collectively. It's not only the government, it's the community, it's the population as a whole that needs to do a better job with such things.
All right. What about you, Bruce? What do you think? I mean, it's 25 years, you would think you would have learned something. You think we would have came back?
And I remember that and also the Detroit riots like they were yesterday because I was right in the middle of them. I shouldn't say that. I was on the edge and in them at times with my black counterparts. And so I got an education from high school that maybe a lot of people didn't get. And the only thing I would say is this. I don't disagree with what Don said about it's gotten worse. In some ways it has. But the thing that I keep seeing, and it hasn't changed, and I still see it in my interaction and mentoring, is if you get black, white, orange, green, purple, pink, whatever color, whatever nationality, whatever thinking process together, one-on-one, we're not angry at each other. We're not fighting each other. We're not screaming at each other. So my point being is, it seems to be we do too much posturing with groups, and when we approach one group with another, we do have that hatred. And whether the person in the group's thinking, well, that's not really me, but I'm going to go along with it. I don't know, but you get people one on one. I did in the middle of the riots, and even now, I don't feel that anger, and I don't project that anger. So what I'm saying in all that is, I still think there's a deep-seated feeling that people want it to be better. They'll work for it to be better, but we still haven't figured out the right way to get there. Our approach is still wrong.
You would think in 25 years we got something, but what about you, Ron? What do you feel?
You would think.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Why? Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ron.
I agree with a little bit of what everybody said. I mean, I don't think it's gotten better. I don't know that it's gotten worse, but I certainly don't feel that it's gotten better. And maybe it's just that we're seeing more of it now than you used to. I don't know what the reason is, but I personally feel that it's gotten worse. I think Frank has mentioned this before. Racism exists, always has existed, always will exist. In all of us, in every country, it's not just the United States. Some people deal with it better than others, but and it's not just the black and white, obviously. I mean, it's racism transcends many different nationalities and ethnic groups, and it's always going to exist. I mean, and I think Bruce said if we sit down and talk to each other, which, we don't do it. That's the problem. We don't do it. But if we sit down and talk to each other, we can understand a little bit more the differences or what we're thinking about the person, what they're thinking about us. But it's easier said than done, And you know, we always concentrate on the negative. And, you know, again, going back to the media you see on TV, you know, anything that, you know, if you see a shooting and it's a black person, it's going to be on TV. But you don't see that many shootings by white people, although I'm sure that there are. So, you know, it's, I don't know. It's, I don't think it's getting better.
So you're that it stayed the same? It didn't get better, didn't get worse. It just kind of stayed the same. We're still,
no, I think it's gotten worse
in terms of race.
And then you have to include a different, a larger amount of population that we have in the United States as well, too.
Right. All right, Frank, what do you think? We got about a few minutes left. And another subject I want to get into.
Yeah,
Frank,
I'm 100% on the opposite of the statements that were just made by everyone. I know it's better today than it was 25 years ago because, you know, the day we have black Navy admirals, which we were one of the most prejudicial parts of the armed forces, women and men, that are four-star. We didn't have that 25 years ago, okay? Almost 25 years ago, just prior to that, we didn't have integrated schools in a lot of locations. We still have segregated neighborhoods in big cities, but there are now laws. I went to church this morning, and it dawned on me while I was in church, there are only three people in that church that had brown skin. My wife and I were one of them, or one each, okay? So there was another person in there. And in the old days, we would have never been sitting in a church setting with white Southerners, all right? We would not probably have been at a lot of resorts because those resorts were prohibitive. When I served in the Navy, at times I was the only Afro-American person or minority on a submarine or a specialized unit. So, you know, we need to really look at this in a better reflection. Times are better than they were in 1968 or the years that you're speaking of with Rodney King. We've come a long way, baby.
All right. Those are some good thoughts. But I want to, we only have about 5 or 6 minutes left, and I want to, we had a discussion about, and it was very, we got a lot of comments on the discussion that was, we asked if men should have a say-so in abortion. If, you know, women should get a signature from the man to be able to get an abortion. Well, I just found out that in Texas in 2011, there's a Texas law that requires women to have a sonogram and to hear a detailed description of the fetus in abortion. And they also give each woman a book called A Woman's Right to Know. So there's a representative, Jessica Farrar in Texas, has just is trying to pass a bill, and it looks like it might pass, that men will pay $100 for unregulated masturbatory emissions and undergo a digital rectal exam to get a vasectomy or colonoscopy or even to buy Viagra. She wants men to also suffer what women have, because if women have to ask men for permission or go through these rules to get an abortion, then men who masturbate, she says, are outside of the birth laws and not doing what they're supposed to do to procreate. What do you think about that, Don? Hello? Everybody's like a shot. What do you think about it?
Anybody, hey, David, this is Frank. I didn't hear your entire. Let me just say this right here. There's certain states that are trying to pass similar laws. On the first part of your statement about the women, those are supposedly pro-life states that want to make it hard for a woman to get an abortion. The last part of the Texas law you mentioned, I'm not familiar with that. But the first part of it where you indicated that the women has to look at the sonogram or something to that effect, those are states that are pro-life and trying to get the lady, you know, not to go through the abortion process. And,
right.
And are generally Republican-oriented places. Not that Republicans are pro-life, because if they were, they wouldn't start or be involved in so many wars.
Well, this is a state rep in Texas who's now requiring men to have certain this. She's trying to pass a law. My understanding is the law is coming up for vote sometime within the next to have go through certain requirements for because masturbation is not doing it is outside of what they're supposed to be doing to create. So she wants them to be fined $100 for every time that a man masturbates, and even to undergo a digital rectum to get a vasectomy or colonoscopy, or even to get Viagra. So, for men in Texas, it might be difficult for them. But I don't know how she plans to enforce that law. What do you think, Ron?
Well, I'm not quite sure I'm understanding everything you're saying, but all I have to say is, you know, it is Texas, so I'll leave it at that.
Wow. Bruce, are you there?
Good comment. I am. You've been cutting in and out, but yes, I still lean towards the idea that a child is created by a couple, and we won't define it any more than a couple. And the decision to, as heinous as it could be, to not have that child exist needs to be a couple's decision. I'm not going to debate whether one suffers more or has to do more work in the creation and delivery of that child, but all I'm saying is I can't fathom why either one, the man says, should ever say the woman has no say, or the woman should say the man has no say. That to me that is just wrong. It's done together, it's decided together, and that's the way it should be.
Well, but this representative, she's a state rep, and she's in Texas, and she's saying masturbation by men is against the law because that is
a crime.
It's a crime because they are not using that to procreate. So if a woman,
in other words, they're wasting their ammunition. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah. Like we do all the time, you know, go to the range.
What if a man, David, is not involved with a woman? That's what he chooses to do, or a woman is not involved with a man or whatever, and chooses to do what she wants. You know what I mean?
But when
that happens, if that happens, you're not in accord.
Why should that be
regulated?
If that
happens, you're not in accord with the Catholic Church.
Hey,
well, that's one of the problems.
And that's a politician. She's a politician.
That's a personal decision that an individual has to make with their faith, with whatever else. The government should not be trying to regulate that.
I don't think she has a husband.
And she needs a man in her life. She doesn't have
I don't think
a,
she has a husband.
She needs a man in her life.
No.
She doesn't have a husband.
What she's saying is the law was passed that women have to have sonograms.
You know,
and all
I've lost track of what that is.
David, that's horrifying. Yeah.
This is the radio show, so.
Yeah.
Who wants to sit down and listen to? Yeah.
What?
Well, one of the things about that statement is you're not supposed to do that that process if you're, let's say, a Catholic, a Roman Catholic, right? Biblically, that's not an acceptable practice. So
you're out of wedlock.
Just to go ahead and what we call the military, excuse the expression, beating off or something like that, that's not
right.
And that's not acceptable under religious criteria, a Christian religious criteria. So that she's trying to take the Bible.
It's going to be a law in Texas.
She's trying to take the Bible
she's trying
in her own hands.
That's right. And that's the problem right there in itself. You know, but that's what she's trying to do. And so.
Well,
but it's ridiculous. And also what she would want to do to women before you have an abortion, that's ridiculous. I mean, if you want to trim down and you're pro-life, there's a bunch of other things that you can do instead of these two scenarios. That'll be like the last thing on my list to do if I were looking to do anything.
Right.
All right. Well, those of you that are listening, we want to thank you for listening to A Man's Voice, and we would like to invite you to join us again next week at 6 o'clock here for The Man's Voice. All right, guys. Nice show. I'll talk to you again next week.
Have a good week, guys.
Have a good weekend, guys. Have a good week,
Storm
too.
18.
Enjoy your vacation or your trip, Frank.
I will. Thank you very much. You guys do well yourselves.
All right. Bye-bye.
Enjoy, fellas. Enjoy, fellas.
Miami Hurricanes, number one recruiting class. Thank you.